Sounds good.
Okay, today is Friday, December 15th, 2017. This is a part three Grand Canyon history interview, oral history interview, with a couple, Barbara Gay Tidball Cameron, that's BarbaraGayTidball Cameron, CameroN, and Barbara goes by Gay, G-A-Y, and Kenneth Lincoln Cameron, K-E-N-N-E-T-H, L-I-N-C-O-L-N, Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N, and Kenneth goes by Buzz, B-U-Z-Z. And we're going to pick this story up with Buzz. May I have your permission, Gay and Buzz, to record this interview on the telephone?
Yes, you may.
Certainly, you may.
Thank you very much. Buzz, what year were you born?
1937.
And where? Where were you born?
Born in Flagstaff. That's Flagstaff, Arizona.
Thank you. What were your parents doing in Flagstaff at the time?
My dad was born in Flagstaff and spent the majority of his life there. My mother was born in Globe and went through school there and then went to Tempe Normal School, which is now ASU. And I don't know how they ever got together, right? But I think she was teaching after she graduated from school and discovered she hated the teaching. And so she, but I don't know whether this was in Flagstaff or I think it might have been in Globe, or maybe even Holbrook. I'm not familiar enough with the facts there to really tell you, but I know they did get together and met and finally were married in, 1923. I think they were married in Flagstaff.
What was the name of your father?
My dad's name was Harold Lincoln Cameron. That's H-A-R-O-L-D, Lincoln, L-I-N-C-O-L-N, Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N.
And your mom's name?
Was Catherine Irene Harbison. Catherine was K-A-T-H-R-Y-N-E, Irene, I-L-E-N-E, Harbison was H-A-R-B-I-S-O-N.
Thank you. What was your dad doing in Flagstaff?
He did a little bit of everything. As I see, he went to school. I think he only went to the 8th grade and then went out and went to work. He was working, I think, when he got married for Union Oil Company, and I think he was delivering heating oil and probably gasoline. That's about all I know about the early days.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I do. I had one brother. He was born in 1925. He died in 2005. His name was Burton Wilbur Cameron.
Okay.
That's B-U-R-T-O-N, Wilbur, W-I-L-B-U-R.
Hmm. All right. What do you remember about growing up in Flagstaff?
Oh, I got some real fond memories of growing up in Flagstaff. My earliest memories were probably really about the time, during the Second World War. Everything was rationed. Are you there?
Yes.
Everything was rationed, and things were just a little bit tough. Flagstaff at that time was a very small community. I think there were less than 5,000 people in the town.
Okay.
There were no traffic lights or anything like that. There were two blinker lights that I remember, one at the corner of Santa Fe Avenue and Beaver Street.
Okay.
The other one at Santa Fe Avenue and San Francisco Street.
All right. And they just had blinking, little blinking lights?
Yeah, those lights, those four-way lights that hung in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Like I say, it was a very small town. As I grew up, our friends used to, and I would be playing out in the middle of the street, not paying too much attention to the traffic. When I was very small, we lived at the corner of Cherry Avenue and LaRue Street, or the southwest corner. That was the original Cameron house that was, I don't even know, I don't think they built it, but they acquired it long before I was ever around.
Okay.
From there, we moved. My folks bought a place at 822 West Santa Fe, which was at the corner of Toltec and Santa Fe Avenue, right east of the road that goes up to Lowell Observatory.
Okay, yep.
The living there, I remember that's where I really met my first very best friend. His name was Bill Thomas. He lived one block south of me.
What year would have that been?
Oh, boy. Probably 43, 44, something like that. 1943, 1944.
Okay. And do you remember the lumber yard being south of the tracks? Did you get over there at all?
I remember the... There were two sawmills.
Yep.
One of them was on the west end of town, and the other was on the southeast end of town. And I don't remember ever actually getting to the sawmills, but I remember when one of them burned down. I can't remember when it was.
Hmm.
It was quite a sight to see, because you sure could see a lot of flames.
I bet. And that was when you were a small boy?
Well, by that time I was probably not quite a teenager, but getting awful close.
Okay. And then, when was the first time you remember seeing the Grand Canyon?
You know, I think I was probably a teenager before I ever got up to look at the Grand Canyon. My first recollection is we went up there just on a day trip, and I had a horrible pain in my side, and I don't remember too much about the canyon, but I know we came home and I ended up in the hospital with an appendectomy.
Oh, my.
So that was my first recollection of Grand Canyon.
Oh my.
After that, I went up there several times. I never did camp camp there, nor did I hike in the canyon until I was in college, when I was on a geology field trip, and we did travel camping. Hike down the Kaibab Trail to the river and across the bridge. And I remember seeing Kay's dad's old geological survey properties, and I was so excited, oh boy, we're here at Phantom Ranch, and I can relax a little bit. And then heard the sad story that we still had another mile to go.
Oh my gosh, yeah. What year was that? You remember?
That would have been probably 1957.
Okay. Do you remember who your professor was?
Agnes Allen was the geology professor.
And did so how was that for you? You got to hike all the way down there with all your gear and turn around and hike all the way back and look at the geology? How'd that all work out?
Well, we hiked down one day, and then the next day we were able to ride mules out.
Ah.
But we the hike from Phantom Ranch over to the Bright Angel Trail, which is about a, 2 or 3 mile hike along the river. And then we caught the mule train there and hiked and rode out on mules. An interesting sidelight there. Gay's mother's name was Edna. And the mule I caught to ride out on was also named Edna. And she was pretty obstinate, and I kind of wonder if maybe she wasn't named after my mother-in-law.
Oh, my gosh. Well, at one point, I'll certainly want to get your recollections of Edna after you meet up with Gay. And what else do you remember about growing up in Flagstaff? Where did you go to high school?
I went to Flagstaff High School. That was the only high school in town then. And I remember seeing Gay and Joe Tidball because they were so very active in the musical. And I think they were in choir and also in the band and things like that. But I didn't pay that much attention. After all, she was a year older than me.
Okay.
And I didn't think I'd ever have anything to do with her.
Huh. Did you play a musical instrument?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I was not particularly inclined in sports, and so about all I did at the high school, besides going, is I had a photography hobby, and so I was one of the photographers for the high school yearbook, the Kinlani. That's Kinlani.
Nice. And this was black and white photography?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Did you work with anybody at the newspaper at all on that, or was it just there in school?
No, it was just in school.
Okay.
I worked at the newspaper to the extent that I used to go down and sell papers on the street, the Arizona Daily Sun. I'd go pick up 10 papers and go sell them and go give them their share of the money, and I kept my share. But I don't think I was ever a real good salesman either.
Okay, yeah, that's a hard one with a small town there.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting deal. So 37, 47, 57, then going to college, did you go to the Arizona State School then here in Flagstaff?
I did, yes. I started in the fall of 1955, and I graduated in the spring of 59.
What'd you graduate in?
I had a degree in business administration.
Okay. And did you want to stay in Flagstaff? Were you thinking about that, or were you thinking about leaving? What were your plans?
Well, at that time, I had gone to work for Northern Arizona Title Company, which is the company my mother was a principal in, and that's where I kind of got into photography. I worked at first in their photo lab. They every day they'd go to the courthouse, which was right across the street from where the office was, and we would take off the recordings that had been recorded in the recorder's office that day by taking off. I mean, we did a kind of a little of a notebook listing the document, the grantor or the seller and the grantee, the buyer or a mortgage or a mortgagee for a mortgage, and then and the legal description of the property. But my job at that time was to take the microfilm, they photographed all the records, and take the microfilm home or over to the office, the dark room. I would develop it and then have it available for the people to use if they needed to examine a title.
Okay. So you were basically making a hard copy there, and then
when an order would be received, somebody would actually go to the records that we kept there in the office. We called them track books, and where they would do a search of all of the documents that had been posted there when they'd hand posting, and then I would get a list of those documents and I would make photocopies of them.
Okay. I want to back up a little bit. You're a Cameron, and there's a town here in northern Arizona named Cameron, where the Highway 89 crosses the Little Colorado River, and then there's a Ralph Cameron, who was territorial representative to Congress, and had a lot of business up at the Grand Canyon. Are you related to Ralph?
Ralph was my great uncle. Actually, he was a half uncle, I guess you could say. He was born in 1863 or something like that. His father was what was his name? Hang on a minute.
Okay.
His name was my great grandfather was named Henry Cameron.
Okay.
And he lived in Maine. He had three children that I know of. One was Miles Jones Cameron. The other was Ralph Henry Cameron, and then from a different wife, they had Burton Atwood Cameron Sr., which was my grandfather.
Okay.
They all lived, initially lived in Maine. The father was a fishing boat captain out of Southport, Maine, from what I understand. He passed away at some point there, I think from tuberculosis, but before that, though, he married Annie M. Cameron, and my grandfather was born.
Okay.
Ralph initially emigrated to Arizona back in, I don't remember the exact date, Ralph Henry moved out to Arizona, I think, in 1883, and his brother Niles followed him in 1886.
Okay.
In 1887, his widow, Annie, and my grandfather, Burton Atwood, moved out to Flagstaff. I think they settled in Flag at the house that I had talked about previously. But Ralph and Niles were very active at the Grand Canyon. They had mining interests, and Niles was active in having and working on and supervising the building of the Bright Angel Trail.
So you can trace your ancestry in Flagstaff back to basically almost the time that the town became a town.
Well, pretty much, yeah. I don't even remember when Flagstaff was incorporated, but they were definitely pioneers in that time. Yes.
You bet. You bet. Wow, that's pretty neat. Does the family have any stories of Ralph that they like to talk about when they all get together that you could share?
Well, Ralph was a consummate promoter. He was always working on a deal somewhere. And I guess that's probably why he became such a prolific politician. I don't remember anything really that made him stand out to me necessarily, at least not in those early days. I know he was a territorial representative when Arizona became a state. As a matter of fact, there's pictures, probably the one I remember, I've seen one in the Arizona Republic, but the picture that I remember also is in the Charlotte Hall Museum, and it's a picture of President Taft signing the enabling thing to make Arizona a state, and Ralph is standing to his right along with a whole lot of other folks.
Fun. Well, that's fun.
Unfortunately, I don't have a picture.
Well, they do there, so that's really neat. What else do you remember about Flagstaff growing up?
Well, as I say, it was a very small town. As I grew and got to the point where I was old enough, or not necessarily even old enough, I was driving a car, we always knew where the policeman was, because he drove an old international truck, and it had a little red light on top of it, and you could see that anywhere in town. So I always get away from him.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have a driver's license at that time. We used to play, like I said, out in the street. We'd play hide-and-go-seek and kick the can. This was after dark, but, you know, people just didn't get out that much in those days. And we'd have a high old time with people, mothers and fathers would start hollering at us about 9 o'clock. Come on, you got to go and come in and go to bed. That's about it. You know, we had a good time. I remember the occasion when the war was over and we celebrated the victory over Japan, and all the big parties that went on that day. That was in probably sometime in August of 45, and I don't remember the hullabaloo about dropping the atom bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but I remember in retrospect about it. But it was a high old time. My dad gave me back my flashlight because he'd been saving the batteries for me, and I got to take the flashlight back because they figured now that the war was over, they would. Before long, the rationing would end.
Ah, okay. Right. Yeah. I'm trying to remember about, just think about other things about Flagstaff that you might have remembered as a small boy. Was there a dairy? Was there a Flagstaff dairy?
There was, yeah. I don't remember exactly where it was, but they delivered milk in the glass bottles, and in the wintertime you had to go out. They delivered pretty early in the morning, and my mom and dad knew that they had to get up pretty darn early and get the milk, because in the wintertime it would freeze, and the milk would just kind of raise up, or the cream would raise up out of that milk bottle.
Mm.
So they'd go up, try and go out and get the milk real early in the morning before it froze.
Okay. And what do you remember of the train? How busy was the train coming through town?
Well, I remember the trains. You got used to the noise pretty early, because in those days they were the steam engines, and as they came in from the west, they would be kind of backlapping. In other words, they'd be letting the engine slow them down because you came off the side of Mars Hill there.
Yep.
And then for those going to the west, oh, they made a tremendous amount of noise because they were chugging and blowing black smoke, and you could really hear them. I was probably maybe a half mile from the railroad track, but boy, you could sure hear all that.
I bet. It must have been a loud, bunch of noise all the time that you got used to.
Yeah, you got used to it. Eventually, you didn't even hear it.
Okay.
And then, when the diesels took over, I don't even remember when that was, but probably in late 40s, early 50s, you never even heard them anymore.
Wow, yeah. Yeah. What else do you remember about that time?
Well, nothing really meaningful. I know we went to school. Some of the winters were pretty horrible. I can remember one in particular. I was still in grade school, and we had a tremendous snowstorm. I think this might have been probably 47 or 48, something like that. But we had so much snow that the tourists and everything were actually up past our windows where we lived there in on West Santa Fe.
Wow.
And that, and had to get up on and shovel the snow off the roof to keep the roof from caving in. We had a porch on the back side of the house, and it had a flat roof, and he had to get up there and shovel that for sure. And he also had to shovel all the snow off the peaked roof as well. And it covered up the windows and everything. You couldn't hardly see our windows.
Wow.
We had a little puppy dog, just a pup, a young dog. He played on the roof. He could go up the play up on the roof.
Wow. I'm trying to think about West Santa Fe, because that road then does climb up to the observatory. On the north side of West Santa Fe, still standing today, is a two-story Moencopi sandstone house, a gorgeous Victorian house. It's a bed and breakfast today. A little further along on the south side, there was a triangular arrangement of streets. The streets to the south came in at an angle, and there was a small wooden house on the west side of that triangle. It was called the Goldwater House. It was the Goldwater campaign headquarters, I think, in 1964, and they painted Goldwater up on the roof. I'm not sure. Do you remember that?
No, I remember. I think I remember the house. It was a two-story house. Is that correct?
No, I think it's a one-story. But it went back to the late 1800s, and it just kind of got added on and added on, as a number of the buildings did there. I'm trying to figure out and remember is the building you grew up with there on Toltec. Is that at 822 West Santa Fe? Is that still standing?
Yes, it is. In 2004, I have a picture that I took. And we went up and went by it, and it was under renovation at the time.
Oh, wow.
But the house is still there. When we lived there, it had just wood shingles on the outside of it. And now it has a kind of almost like shiplap.
Okay.
But it's a very attractive place now.
The
northeast corner of Taltec and Santa Fe. Taltec, I think, might be called Thorpe now.
Okay.
I don't know that for sure, but that's the road that also that went up to the road to Mars Hill or the World Observatory, continued west on Santa Fe, and then Taltec went north and then kind of veered off to the northwest and ultimately went into a place called, the City Park was up there.
Right.
That's where the Indian powwow was always held, and there was always a carnival there on the 4th of July. But it also went up and kind of veered off to the east to a housing, I don't know what you'd call it now. It's called Brannan Homes, but it was built by the governor. I think it was probably low-cost housing for maybe people returning from the war, or maybe people who were working out at the Navajo Ordnance Depot.
Right, it's called Clark Homes today.
Yeah, Clark Homes. That's right, yeah. You're right.
Okay, yeah, and that's still there. Okay, so then your house would have been on the corner of Toltec and San Francisco on the northeast corner.
Santa Fe.
Of Santa Fe, sorry. Santa Fe and Toltec. Is that right on the northeast corner?
Northeast corner, that's correct.
Excellent. Oh, that's great. Okay, and then... anything else you want to recall or add before we have you start working at a gas station?
Okay. Well, before that, my grandfather had owned that property, and I don't know anything about it, but my folks bought him out, and then probably in the I can't remember exactly when, but they built an apartment, a garage and an apartment complex behind their house, right between, right on the alley and with the garage doors coming out on Toltec.
Right.
And that's still there, at least the last time I was in Flagstaff. But the folks built that and there were two apartments upstairs, and there was a small single room down below that Mom and Dad made up as a TV room for them. After Dave and I were married, we lived in one of those apartments.
Oh, fun. Very nice. I know exactly where that is, so I just walked right past there the other day.
North of that, across the alley, was the property that was owned by Pete and Ann Mickabaugh. I just saw a recent obituary for their oldest son, Albert. Mickey.
How do you spell their last name?
Oh boy, Michelbach.
Thank you.
His dad's name, I think, was also Albert, and his mother's name was Ann.
Okay. You know what? I should ask you as well. What else do you remember about Flagstaff High? And I believe was the Flagstaff High School north, sort of east of Toltec, but north, yes. But north of Santa Fe.
Yes, it was. It was north. Actually, there was a street that dead-ended at the high school, and I don't remember the name of it, but it, do you know where the Federated Church is?
Thinking.
Federated Church, do you know where, it used to be right across the street from Emerson School, but I think that school was torn down, and I think there might be a library or something there now.
Yes, okay, Federated Church, you're exactly right, you're down by the library and City Hall, indeed.
What's that street, was that Skip Graves?
Oh, my heavens.
Well, anyway, at the north end, it dead-ended at the Flagstaff High School campus.
And it still does. Well, actually, it keeps going, but it runs along the east side of the campus and then goes up by Mrs. Brown's Burger Bar, which is now a different owner, but... Yes.
Well, at that time, the high school actually faced Sit Graves, and I think it was Sit Graves. Anyway, that road, and that was all that was there. And ultimately they built a gymnasium to the west of that. And even later, after we graduated and went on with our life, they built another wing out to the east side of it that went all the way over to the street that you're talking about that went on further north.
Right. I just realized I'm mistaken there. You're exactly right. That north-south road that goes between the library and the Federated Church does dead-end at the high school.
Right. That building has subsequently been destroyed. It's not there anymore. That was the old original high school building.
Okay, okay. What do you remember about that old building?
Oh, big old two-story thing. The front steps, they went up about probably 10 or 15 feet. Actually, I think it must have been a three-story building because, there was kind of a lower level, and then you'd walk up to the middle level, and that was the main floor. The principal's office was, as you walk in the front door, was to the right, and then you went on further, and I think there was a big hallway that went both west and east, and there were classrooms on either side. There was an auditorium that was right behind on the north side of that hallway, and then so the classrooms were on the south side of that, and then as you went, then there was a wing that went off to the north on the east side, and that was the junior high school. There were probably five or six classrooms on that, and then the stairwell, and you went upstairs and duplicated it. I don't think there were any classrooms on the west side of that, but like I said, I think that was torn down. I don't think it's even there anymore.
That's right. Yeah, that's all been updated, renovated, completely laid out. So another question I forgot I wanted to ask you, your house on Toltec in Santa Fe, was that wood heat or was that gas heat? Do you remember?
It originally was oil heat. There was originally an oil stove that sat in the living room, dining room, and then at some point, and I can't remember exactly when, they took that oil heater out and they put a floor furnace in that was also oil heated, or burned fuel oil.
Yep.
And then later on, when Southern Union Gas came in with their gas line, they converted it to a gas furnace, but it was a floor furnace.
Got it. Thank you. Yeah, I was thinking about, what did y'all do to to stay warm in the winter.
Yeah, well, I had a nice fireplace, too, but that was mostly for ambiance. But it put out a lot of heat, but it also a lot of heat up the chimney, too.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Nice. So you had seen Gay and her twin sister, Joe, there in high school, but again, she was a year older than you. How did you get a job working at the gas station?
I had worked there previously. I was just a very young, probably maybe 13 or 14 years old. The service station was owned by a guy by the name of Haydee Lane, H-A-Y-D-E-E, Lane, L-A-N-E. He's an old cowboy. His wife was a school teacher. A high school teacher. Her name was Ruth, R-U-T-H, and my older brother eventually married his daughter. His daughter's name was Lois Lane. But I went to work for Haiti. I think I was still in junior high at the time, when I was going to high school, I quit them and went to work for my mom at the title company, developing film and making photocopies. But when I remember Jay and coming in and getting gas and everything, I think I must have been probably a senior in high school.
Where was Haiti's gas station?
It was on the corner of Santa Fe and the road that goes north now and goes to the Grand Canyon.
Humphreys,
yes. It was on the north-east corner.
Okay, there's
I think there's a motel.
Yeah, that's right.
Haiti built the motel, part of the motel, and the check that the service station was just on the corner, and the motel wrapped around an L shape behind it.
I see.
It was a service station.
Okay, how busy was that? I mean, I'm just trying to think about Route 66. Was the way to travel by car, through northern Arizona, and it would have gone right past that gas station and then tucked under the railroad track and headed off to points further west, out to Parks and off to Williams. How busy were you there at the station?
Surprisingly, we were very busy. We had a lot of local traffic. But then we also had a lot of touristers.
Yep.
They were usually doing their, well, of course, I only worked after school or on the weekends there at the time, but I think he usually had at least two people other than him working there, and the gas pumps were usually pretty full.
Okay. Did you often give directions to tourists about where to go? Was that a fairly common?
Very, very much so. A lot of times we call those the people come in for information, wind and water. They wanted to check their water and their and ask for information and air their tires. But yeah. They always ask, how far is it to Albuquerque, or how far is it to Gallup, or how far is it to Williams? So we pretty much had that, we could tell them right off the top of our head how far it was.
Nice. Fun. So Gay had noticed you, and you knew who she was. What were your thoughts when you saw her working in the title shop?
Well, I was kind of impressed with her. She seemed like a very nice gal, and This was probably, I think she came to work there probably 19, either late 56 or early 57. And at that time, I was going to college. And when I started going to college, I quit the service station business and went back to work for my mom in the photo lab. And I worked there all the news and stuff like that, and sometimes even at night, because at that time we were real, real busy, and there was just a lot of film to be developed and a lot of photos to be, documents to be created. So she worked. At that time, I was back in the dark room, which was quite a ways away from where she worked. She was up in the accounting department. So we really didn't get together romantically or anything like that until the time that her sister got married, and they commissioned me, or they asked me to take the photos of their wedding. And at that time, I did that and went to the church and photographed them coming out of the church and everything. And then they had a reception up in a house up near the high school, and I took all kinds of photos there. And then as Joe and her husband Don pulled out and left to go on their honeymoon, I asked Joe if she'd like to go out and have a cup of coffee.
Oh, nice.
And she agreed, and so that's where it all started.
Very fun. So had you ever photographed a wedding before?
No.
Were you a little nervous?
No, I was probably cocky. So I had a lot of film, and I burned a lot of it up that night.
Yes, that helps if you can take a lot of pictures. Did you get some good shots?
Yeah, we did.
Nice.
A lot of real good ones. I had just purchased a new strobe light, which that was relatively new in those days, but you didn't have to use flash bulbs. You know, you could just bang away real fast, and the battery pack weighed about 10 pounds, and I'd hang it around my shoulder, but it recharged the battery, or the bulb pretty quickly.
Yeah, that would have been a state-of-the-art thing.
Yeah, it really was. They were wet batteries, and so you had to be careful that you didn't tip them over or something like that, because that would be like a car battery, and they were about as heavy, too.
Wow. Nice. So, I'm going to ask Gay now. Gay, what were you thinking? You went for coffee.
Oh, I just thought, gee, I'll go anywhere after the wedding. We didn't want to go home just cool, so anyway, when he wanted to know if I'd go have coffee, I said, sure. I was all dressed up. I was a maid of honor for Joe, and all dressed up and no place to go until he said, let's go have a cup of coffee. And I thought, oh, great.
where did you go?
There was a place, I believe it was close to where the Dairy Queen was or is. Out on your way to Williams, and I can't think of the name of it, but it's a popular place where kids went.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it.
So that was south of the tracks?
Yes, south of the tracks, across from the NAU campus.
Yep.
Uh-huh. That's where most of the kids all went for special occasions or whatever. Yeah, and we just visited, they had a cup of coffee, you know, just talked about what a beautiful wedding it was and all that. And I don't think we were out too late, but then I believe he took me home. That was it.
Nice. And this was in the summer of 1956 or the fall of 1956?
No, this would have been in the August of 1957.
Okay, thank you. And then when did you two get married?
June 21st, 1958.
Okay. Buzz, when was the first time you met Gay's father, Dean?
Probably at the wedding. At Joe's, Joe and her twin sister's wedding.
Okay, that would make sense, because Dean and Edna would have been there.
Yeah. I had met her mother before that. She's the one that talked me into taking the photos.
Nice. When was the first time you went up to Lee's Ferry then?
Oh, after Gay and I started going together, probably the fall of 57 sometime. They invited me up, or Jay invited me up, and so we went to the Lee's Ferry, and of course we weren't married then, so Dean and Edna lived in just a little two-room house with a kind of an appended kitchen and bathroom on it, and there was only the bedroom and also a couch in the living room, so there wasn't any place for me to sleep there. But they had a guest house that had been built years ago down right next to the laboratory where Doc Dean used to do his mud pies and things like that. And so I slept there at that time until we were married. And Gay slept with her folks up in the... She'd sleep on the couch and they'd sleep in their bed.
Uh-huh. Okay. What do you remember about Lee's Ferry at that time?
Oh, it was a very interesting country. It was so remote. I tell you, the road to getting down there at that time, you took your life in your hands in a lot of cases, because in a lot of times you'd be going down a wash, and you'd have to kind of dodge boulders, and it was really, it was a chore. And then when you got down there, the place was very, very remote. There was no electricity except a coal plant. There was no, the water was a well that wasn't drinking water. You got your drinking water from a spring, which was on up the river a little ways. So it was interesting country, but it was very remote and awesome. I remember one time we went up there. I don't remember if this was before or after we were married, probably after, and it was high water. In other words, it was May through July, and it was hotter than blue blazes, and that river was it seemed to me like it was a half mile across.
Hmm. That could have been 50...
That was the Grand Canyon Dam, of course.
Yeah, 57 was a big, big water year, and 58, not quite so much, but interesting. You mentioned the drinking water came from a spring further up the river. Was that then piped down to the house? Is that how that worked?
No. Dean had to get in his international truck and load a barrel, a 55-gallon barrel, and drive up and fill it. And I don't know how I guess he had a hose or something, but he'd fill it and then drive it back and horse it off that truck. And then I guess, I don't know, did he put it, was it on a sawhorse or something? I don't remember that aspect of it, but then Edna could go out and get the drinking water from, because it was outside the house.
Oh, it wasn't plumbed into the house. You had to go out and take it straight out of the barrel.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty remote and pretty old-fashioned, so to speak.
Yep. And the generator, was that run just kind of on an as-needed basis then?
Right. Yeah. He had to fire it up every morning before 8 o'clock because he got on his two-way radio to Flagstaff and Albuquerque. But then he'd shut it off, and he had a way to shut it off from the house. He didn't have to go up and shut it off. He didn't have to hire anyone to shut it off. He could shut it off from the house. But to start it, it didn't have a starter motor or anything like that. He had to actually go up and crank it. And the generator room or house was probably 50 yards on up the side of the mountain. Because, you didn't really hear it when you were inside, but you could hear it when you were outside. It made a lot of noise.
Okay. And then he would have been having to dry the water, the mud out of the water as part of his operations to test the sediment load in the river. Did he use the generator for that, or was there some sort of solar way to do that?
No, he had they used propane.
Ah.
He had a little bake oven kind of a thing down in the lab, and he had a propane bottle there that he could connect to it, and so that's the way he did his mud pies. And then they also had a propane refrigerator in the house, an old Cervell refrigerator, and a propane gas range, cooking range.
That makes sense. What was the I'm sorry, could you spell out the name of the propane refrigerator?
I think it's Cervell, Cervell.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, and a propane propane stove, sure.
And I think they must have had propane heat in there too, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a propane, probably a wall furnace or something like that in there to heat the house in the wintertime.
Nice. Did you hike around there at all? Did you hike up? There's a trail that goes out back behind the ferry buildings there, up the cliff, the top. You can actually look off to the north, off into Glen Canyon from there. Did you hike around there at all?
Oh yeah, we used to go hiking. I never went to the top. I'd go up far enough to where you could see off to the south and the southwest. But I never went to the top. That was a little more work than I wanted to go through.
Hmm.
I know Jay did. Jay and her, I guess her older sister, and Dean went up there one year. This is probably before I was involved.
Nice.
But we'd go over, you had to kind of ford the Paria River. And so we'd go over there and hike up to Lonely Dell Ranch and hike around the country, hike up river a little bit, up the Colorado a little bit. It was kind of, that was pretty rough hiking there. But
mm-hmm.
And we'd always go down to the lower boat landing, which is where all of the boats that were going to head in for Grand Canyon would probably put in, and anybody that was coming down river from all up the Green River and all that, that's where they always stopped and either got out or reprovisioned.
Okay. What do you remember about that?
Not much, really. I do remember after we were married, getting to look at one of those jet boats that came up the river. I think there were two of them that made it up the river, but there was just one of them there on a trailer, and that's the first time I'd ever seen a jet boat, and I was very interested in it.
Did you get any pictures of that?
I probably did, but I don't know where they would be now.
Hmm. And did you, you know, you were taking photographs, you know, of Joe's wedding and doing a lot of photography work there for the title company. Did you shoot your own photographs at the time?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because you know, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily had a camera, but you were certainly into photography. I'm just wondering, did you take your camera wherever you went and take lots of photos?
I took an awful lot of pictures. I know that, but I'll be darned if I know what happened to them. Well, some of them would be slides, because they're now 60 years old, and I don't know how good they would be. But,
you will be surprised. You will be very pleasantly surprised, and I want to encourage you to go try to find those.
But there were an awful lot of black and white stuff I took, too. We have a pasteboard box down in my basement, or not the basement, but down in our closet that has got a tremendous amount of stuff like that in it, and that may be where some of that is.
I'd love to see that sometime. That would be a lot of fun. So where did you guys, I'm going to kind of run forward to June of 1958, where did you guys get married?
We got married in Flagstaff at the Federated Community Church, the same church that Jay's twin was married at a year earlier.
Nice. Where did you go for your honeymoon?
Well, we went to California, went to the Los Angeles area.
Wow.
We went through Las Vegas and then down to L.A. I had two uncles that lived there and some real good friends of my folks, and we visited with them. We didn't stay with them, but we visited with them. We were gone about a week, I think.
What were you driving?
I had a brand new 1956 Chevrolet Model 210 with a V8 engine and a standard transmission, and oh boy, did I love that!
Wow. Wow, nice. Yeah, that must have been a fast car.
It was.
I'm not sure where you would be able to drive it fast. But
well, that brings up another story. Before Jay and I got together, I was running around with a couple of guys, and I saw a highway patrolman taking off like a shot-out rabbit going down Highway 89 heading for Oak Creek. And I thought, I'm going to go see where that guy's going. Because he had his lights on and everything, and he was really rotating. Well, I got him near caught him, and he wasn't real happy about that. And as a matter of fact, he didn't sight me, but he gave me a real strong talking to about that not doing things like that again. Anyway, we became real good friends, as a matter of fact. And later on, after that, I used to ride with him a lot, and even after Dan and I were married, I'd ride with him occasionally.
Nice. Do you remember his name?
His name was Edward Short. S-H-O-R-T.
Nice.
And he lived up in the Clark Homes.
Okay.
He had a real pretty wife and a real cute daughter, and then while he had another daughter there, they had another child. Subsequently, after that, he moved. At one time he lived in Kingman, and at one time he lived in Cottonwood. I've lost touch with him now.
Okay. All right. Nice. So you guys were for honeymoon for a week, and then did you come back and both stay working for the title company?
Yep, we did. We lived in our first house was a little two-room house out behind the Catholic Church. The downtown Catholic Church.
Yep.
Been there for 100 years.
Yep.
And right behind that is there's an alley, and then there's a big white, used to be white house, and behind that is a little two-room house, and that's where we that's where we lived for, oh gosh, probably, what, 2 years?
A year and a half.
Year and a half, 2 years, yeah.
So that would have been 57, 58, 59, almost 1960. Or 1961.
No. 1960. I graduated from college in 59. We were living there then, weren't we? Yeah, so it was probably early 1960 when we left there. That's when we moved into one of my folks' apartments up behind where my folks lived.
And Gay, how long did Dean keep staying at Lee's Ferry?
He
left in 61.
Yeah. Yeah. He went to Lee's Ferry from the bottom of the Grand Canyon in 52, and then 54. Oh. Yeah, and he went to Lee's Ferry in 54, and then he worked. Then he moved to Flagstaff in 1961, from Lee's Ferry.
Did he retire then?
No. He worked there in the office in Flagstaff from 61, and then in 1963, he moved to Boulder City, and he was still with the USGS there, and they lived in Boulder City, Nevada until 1966, and they moved to Blythe.
Wow.
And then in 1967, he retired November the 24th of 1967.
And then did they stay in Blythe?
No.
Actually, they didn't live in Blythe. They didn't want to live in California.
Yeah.
So they bought a 40-foot trailer and lived in Aaronburg, which is right across the river.
They loved it hot.
They did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So did they then retire to Aaronburg and stay there then?
No. No, they moved back to Bullhead City, which is another hot box. But they had, when did they buy the, when they were living in Boulder City, they bought a double-wide mobile home, and they put it on a lot down on Lake Mead. I don't know the name of the, it was a big RV park down there. And then when they moved to Aaronburg, yeah. What did they do with it then?
They had it moved to their
lot. In the meantime, they bought a lot in Bullhead City, and they've had that mobile home moved down to Bullhead City. So when they retired from Aaronburg, or from Blythe, they moved up to that trailer.
Nice. Just hot. Did you guys get a chance to go up and look at the construction of Glen Canyon Dam?
Yes, we did.
When was that? What can you tell me about that?
Well, the first time that I was ever up there, we were out of Lee's Ferry, and we asked if we could drive up to the dam site, and so we did, and it was pretty primitive there. The road was complete because they were hauling all the equipment and all of the supplies and everything up there, so the road was good. But we had to drive back and cross the Marble Canyon Bridge and then drive down to Bitter Springs, where we could turn and go up the mountain up to Echo Cliffs and Echo Peaks. No,
yep.
No. Anyway, Anyway, they climb up there and went through the big V there and went up to Page. Page was pretty small at that time. And we got to go right down to where they were working on the side. They had the coffer dams in, and they were going to excavate the bedrock down in the bottom. They were still blasting stone or rocks away from the side, probably for the keyways to the dam site.
Okay.
They had a footbridge that they had installed that went clear across that chasm. And believe me, it was a long ways.
Did you walk that thing?
Huh?
Did you guys walk that?
I walked out on it, but we didn't go too far because it was spooky. It didn't have any bottom in it. It was chicken wire, or not chicken wire, but strong fencing wire on it, and you could look right down and see nothing but space.
Wow.
And it had tall sides to it, and where you kind of had to hang on to that because all you had to do was walk on it, and the bridge would move a little bit. So we walked out probably maybe 100 yards, and then that was enough. And we came back and survived that and was glad to get off of it. But it was very interesting. You could look back. Excuse me a second. Shush.
Somebody's excited there.
Yeah, I think she saw somebody out in the backyard.
Okay.
But then we got to, I think at that time we got to see Art Green. First time I'd ever met him.
So hang on, I've got a question for you before we head off to Art. When you were out on that footbridge, I'm assuming that was 1958 or 59-ish?
Probably 59-ish, yeah.
Okay. And then what were your recollections of Art?
Well, you know, I thought we might have met him then, but we couldn't have because at that time his holdings were on the other side of the river. His holdings were, and then the dam had, I mean, the bridge over the dam had, over the Colorado had not been completed yet. They were working on it.
Okay.
It had to be in, probably, 60, excuse me just a minute. Oh, the dog's decided she wants to get involved too.
Has a story to tell, yes, sir.
And at that time, I think we must have gone up to Kanab and come in that. Well, no, actually, we probably waited until the bridge was completed and went back and crossed the river there at Page and went up. And Art had it ultimately ended up being the first RV park for the Lake Powell, and it was up on the bluff overlooking Wally Bay, and he had some rock sandstone cottages that he built, and that's where I first met Art Green. And he had a bunch of kids.
Right.
And I don't remember too much about them, but Art was a memorable guy to meet, I'll tell you.
How so?
He was a big man, and he was very articulate and was very sure of himself. And he was interesting, a guy to talk to, and he had a lot of knowledge about the Indian reservation and the river, and just a very interesting man.
Nice. I'm trying to think of what else can I ask you about Art that might have you recall any stories he told or
You know, he and his family ultimately were able to get the concession for the Wall Wheat Marina, and that's when he had the RV park, and the guy made a lot of money there.
Right. And he'd been quite a number of years out there at Cliff Dwellers Lodge, running the lodge there, and then running tours up into Glen Canyon from Lee's Ferry. Did you guys ever get a motorboat and go up into Glen Canyon?
Yes, after the dam was at least under construction and they were beginning to fill the lake.
Afterwards, okay, but not before?
No.
Okay.
Gay's, I think Gay's mom was fortunate and got to do that.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, Gay had mentioned that last time, that she had gone on a Georgie White River trip there through Glen Canyon, and I looked at the Rainbow Bridge Register. I did not see her name there, but it doesn't mean I didn't miss it, plain and simple.
I think she'd have seen it if she'd have been there. Maybe that was even before there was one.
Oh, that register goes way back into the 20s. It captured, there's a couple pages missing here and there, and so she could have been on one of those missing pages. So I want to ask you, sort of with some tact here, but don't hold back, what were your thoughts about the Glen Canyon Dam and its construction?
Frankly, I was all for it. In the meantime, you know, after Gay and I we left Flagstaff in 1965 and moved to Kingman, and we bought a boat and spent a lot of wonderful times down on Lake Mojave, and then were so delighted with the fact that Glen Canyon was under construction, and we took our boat. And this would have been probably 1966 or 67, and drove up and put the boat in the water at Wall Wheat Marina and spent the better part of a week out on Lake Powell.
Wow.
At this time, it was a very small, it wasn't anything like it is now.
Right.
But you'd have to go into some of these labyrinth canyons, and you got to see things that are now 100 feet underwater.
Wow.
It was really a fantastic experience. We got to all the way up to Rainbow Bridge and were able to hike. At that time, it was probably half, three-quarters of a mile that we had to hike up to before we could see the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But it was well worth it. And we were just overwhelmed with it.
Nice. Gay, do you think your father shared that view?
Do I what?
Do you think your father shared the view that the Glen Canyon Dam was a good idea?
I think he did.
Okay.
Yeah, my mother might not have as much because she had taken a river trip with, I believe, Harry Ellison, maybe Georgia White,
okay,
before this was ever started, and she saw all these beautiful places that are now, you know, were being buried, you know, were covered up. But I think my dad was for it. I'm not sure about my mother so much.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just, because you guys knew that place, or certainly your mom did, but your dad certainly knew the river as a river that would drop in the winter and come up in the spring floods.
Right.
He would have seen the fish and the driftwood. And the sand, and so, you know, he would have known the river in its natural state before the dam, and I'm just kind of curious what he would have thought about that. Some people liked it, and some people didn't, and that was that. So,
right, yeah. I don't think he was really against it, but I know my mother was not real happy with it.
Okay. Thank you. Why did you guys move out to Kingman?
Why did we move to Kingman?
Yeah.
Buzz's got a transfer with the title company there. You want to tell me?
Yeah, I moved over there in 1965 as assistant manager of the Mojave operations for Transamerica Title.
Okay.
And got a nice increase, and we found a nice home, and our kids were very, very small, and they got to grow up for 11 years in the Kingman area, and it was a great place to raise a family.
Nice. Definitely a little warmer than Flagstaff, too.
Yeah, warmer, and that's high desert. That's about 3,500 feet there. It's kind of like Page. So it really wasn't desperately hot in the summertime.
And it would have been easy to visit then Gay's parents, I suppose, but when they were at Boulder City. And then did you travel back to Flagstaff to visit your parents then back there?
Well, my folks had left Flagstaff in 1963.
Ah.
Dad moved down. They bought a bunch of land down in the Verde Valley.
Oh.
And Dad retired on a medical retirement from the Navajo Army Depot.
Okay.
61 or 62. And then Mom and her partners sold the company, the Northern Arizona Title, to Phoenix Title and Trust Company, which was owned by Transamerica Corporation at the time. And she retired down there, and that was in 1963.
Okay.
So, we didn't go back to Flag real often.
Okay. What do you guys remember about Boulder City at that time?
It's probably the same now as it was then. The town that never grow, but the Park Service, the Bureau of Reclamation wouldn't let it. And so it was a nice little town. Didn't really, set the world on fire.
Right, right. Yeah, it's just no gambling and very... very much a Mayberry town, right there in Nevada.
Yeah.
My dad did take us down to the power plant there at Glen Canyon Dam. Glen Canyon? Oh.
Boulder Dam.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got to go down and see what all the makings were, of how the dam operated and everything.
Nice. That must have been fun.
Yeah, that was.
Very interesting.
Buzz, did you have your camera for that?
No, I didn't take it then.
Oh.
I don't think they didn't want anybody taking pictures down there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it would have been really... I'm thinking, oh, that might have been neat if you'd have done that. But, yeah, I can understand. Fun. So, Kingman for 11 years. And how many children did you raise there?
We have two children. We have, our son is Clay. He was born, July 6th, 1963. And our daughter, Cheryl, was born July 12th,
1964. Nice. Fun. And then, where did you go from Kingman?
From Kingman, we transferred to a new operation, a new title operation in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay.
We opened up a title company up there, started from scratch. It was quite an experience. In retrospect, I wouldn't do it again. But, we survived. We were there for 3 years, and then we moved. They moved me back, moved us back to Arizona, and we spent a year in Yuma, running the Utah or the Yuma operation.
Okay.
Then they transferred me to main office Phoenix here, and I worked as a title plant manager for years, and then as an administrative assistant for the manager of the Maricopa County operations, and eventually got into information technology. Computers were just now springing up, and we just about had to lose our minds, but we started the computer system for the company.
Wow. So that's why you were so easy to send me the PDF oral history deed of gift. I was like, wow, this is great, because most people in your position are not quite so savvy with computers.
Well,
good for you.
I'm not anymore either. You know, every day they're growing more sophisticated, and I'm growing dumber.
Well, they do keep changing. There is that. there's no doubt about that.
Your statement of the year.
Yeah, Salt Lake City. From growing up in Flagstaff and then moving to Kingman and to Salt Lake, I kind of wanted to go back for a bit and ask you what you recalled about maybe your first trips to Phoenix from Flagstaff or Albuquerque. I'm just trying to think of when you guys took your honeymoon out to Los Angeles. That would have been a huge city. You know, coming from such a small mountain town, did you have any thoughts about Salt Lake as a city, or Phoenix, or Los Angeles?
Well, as I was growing up, I had problems with my eyes. My eyes were crossed, and so I was familiar with Phoenix because about every 6 weeks we'd have to go down, and I'd have an eye examination, and usually have to spend the night and everything. So I was familiar with Phoenix, and Phoenix was nothing like it is now anyway at that time. This was probably back in the probably late 40s or early 50s. But eventually I went to Phoenix and had surgery on my eyes.
Yep.
And so I was able to throw my glasses away for the next 30 years.
Nice.
But we were familiar with the big city. After Gay and I were married, she had eye trouble too, and so we used to go to Phoenix occasionally, not probably every 6 months or so, and she'd get her contacts renewed.
Okay. So you guys weren't unfamiliar with that?
Pardon?
You weren't unfamiliar with that?
No, not really. And as far as going to Salt Lake, well, that's just another big city. We kind of had to learn our way around, driving like crazy and getting on the freeways and stuff, because we weren't used to that. But, you know, you're pretty resolute. You figure things out pretty quickly.
Right, right. Gay, your mom and dad then retired to Ehrenberg, or sorry, to Bullhead City. When did they pass away?
My dad passed away February 6th of 1984. My mother passed 83. And my mother passed away February 5th of 1994.
Okay.
And my dad died February 6th of 1983, and my mother died February 5th of 1994.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But they didn't all this time live in Bullhead City.
Yeah.
Ah.
After the summer or two in down there, they decided, well, we got to get out here at least for the summer. And so they did. They had a little bitty travel trailer. I think it was something like 16 feet or 18 feet. And they would climb in it to probably the 1st of May or the middle of May and disappear and go up where it was cooler, either to Utah or to Fontana or anywhere up in the higher country where it was a little cooler. And they finally ran across a place in Utah, just north of Kanab, a little town called Orderville.
Yeah.
A nice little Mormon town. Once again, James Baum never met a stranger, and dropped off a piano. And so they kind of fell in love with that place.
Wow.
And found a lot they could buy, and darned if they didn't buy it, and put a manufactured home on it.
Nice.
This was probably 60, when did they move up there? Sometime in the 70s. Yeah. Anyway, so he ended up there, and Dean contracted, or caught, or whatever you do, lung cancer.
Okay.
And we, he suffered from it for probably a year and a half or so before he ever told anybody about it. And then finally it got to the point where he had to have some help. And so we went up on their 80th, his 80th birthday?
Yeah.
His 80th birthday, and spent a long weekend, and realized that he was quite ill, and the following, and we tried to get him to come down and even stay with us or whatever. He wouldn't do it, wouldn't go to the doctor, wouldn't do anything. And eventually, in January, I think, of the next year, that would have been 83. January of 83, we drove up to Cameron. That was about halfway between Orderville and Mesa, and met them. Dean would still drive, Edna wouldn't drive, and we met them, and I drove Dean, and Jay took her mom, and we came back down here to Mesa, and got him to see a doctor, and it was probably 2 to 3 weeks later he was in the hospital and passed away.
Okay. Did he smoke?
Yes. All his life.
Okay.
Interesting thing about that, are you familiar with the Don Winder's claim, energy?
Yes, sir. That's Department of Energy people that were living in the southwestern United States during the nuclear bomb testing. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he was down here all that time. He was either in Bullhead City, Grand Canyon or Lee's Ferry or Flagstaff.
Right.
And so we were able to successfully prosecute a Downwinder's claim on his life, and were successful and got the $50,000 for which we split among his three children.
Okay. Yeah. Well, certainly he and Edna, and the girls as well were there during that time. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
I don't think that's where he got lung cancer. I think he got lung cancer from smoking, because he smoked like a chimney.
Is he a 2 or 3 packer a day?
Well, yeah, at least 2 probably.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What a life. I mean, just quite the amazing journey there. And it's interesting because in the 1970s, moving to Orderville. Kanab and that whole area now are very popular with retirees that aren't Mormon moving into that area, and Dean and Edna were certainly pioneers in that respect.
That's right.
Oh, interesting. We have been at this now about an hour and a half, maybe a little over. It seems like this is a good kind of place to sort of wrap things up, maybe. What are you thinking? What questions have I not asked that I should have?
Oh, boy. At this point, I don't know.
You've done a remarkable job, Tom.
Well, you're very kind. What let's do is maybe we'll end this now at the end of part three, and then let it sit a bit, and if we want to come back and do a part four, absolutely we can do that. But let's just see kind of what other questions we can come up with between now and a future discussion.
Okay.
That sounds fine.
So I usually wrap these up, if this is going to be the last one we do, I'm going to ask Gay, I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to ask Buzz the same question. And so the question is, 30 or 40 years from now, someone's going to listen to this interview, and what do you want them to know about the world, your life, and your thoughts for the future?
Oh, I think this would be wonderful information that we've had these last three conferences, Tom, for our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren to know, read about. I don't believe any of them would have ever suspected that Joe and I would have had the childhood or the growing up years at the Grand Canyon that we did have without your interview, Tom. So I'm really excited to get this all spelled out on paper or on record or however. I just hope that our future generations have enough interest in history that they'll want to read it and know about it. I suspect there will be somebody along the way that's going to be very interested in it. And I really appreciate you taking your time and energy to get this all recorded and get it all in the history books.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to recount your journey. That's really wonderful. Buzz, you?
Well, I feel very, very fortunate to have lived in the time that I did live, and I found it a wonderful gal, and we're going to be celebrating our 60th wedding anniversary in June, and I'm delighted that you have done this and given us the opportunity to express ourselves. I don't know what to expect for our kids in the future. I'm very frightened of the way things are going now, but I'm hoping that at some point reason will prevail and that we can continue life in a meaningful manner.
Thank you. That's very nice. And I want to congratulate you both on your 60th wedding anniversary. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
That's really neat. You know, once again, I'd just really like to thank you both for your willingness to participate in this Grand Canyon Oral History. This is going to complete part three of an interview with Barbara Gay Tidball Cameron and Kenneth Lincoln Cameron. Today is Friday, December 15th, 2017. My name is Tom Martin. And if you guys could stay on the line, I'm going to turn this machine off. And thank you both very much.
Thank you.